Welcome to the Analytics of Dynasty. This is your running back rundown here, your human hand grenade update. Some moving pieces, so we'll go through here and look and do a look-see. So there's been a big call, I think, for if it's the Dallas to go the Pollard way. They really haven't done that, which is, it's not entirely surprising given their commitment to Zeke. And everything. I'll be interested to see sort of as this contract of these guys both come up, sort of what they do at the end of it. They're going to sign Pollard long term. What are they going to sort of do? Be really interested to watch that. But you look since week, the last 4 weeks, it's been 62 touches for Zeke, 49 for Pollard, so 12.8 points per game for Pollard. He's running back 16 during that time. Again, that's full of that time. So the points per game, he's a little bit less because there hasn't been all the guys in that range that have played, but running back two type production, lower end running back two type production, I guess is the easiest way to say it. Zeke running back 9, 14.3 points per game, high end running back two type production. So when you sort of look at that, like it's, again, there's not a huge gap between the two, but we'll see there. This didn't really change this past week either. 22 routes for Zeke, 16 for Pollard, 13 carries, 45 yards for Zeke. Pollard, 7 for 71 and a touchdown. He had that huge gain that was over, like, way over expectation. I think he was, like, expected for, I saw something like negative 1.3 yards or something like that. It was definitely more than one negative yard expected on that play. And he got a huge gain out of it. So good on him. I don't see the situation changing, and I think they're going to keep rolling with Zeke. So I think you can still start him in the running back. Maybe it's not a high-end running back run one type production, but it's definitely a running back 1-2 that span, and you're probably not benching him. So you'd hope for a little bit more. You hope he gets a little bit healthier. And this game with the 10 days off, maybe he does feel a little bit better. But I think he's a full go plug and play in a pretty good offense. Okay, Minnesota, you have Madison, 6 forced missed tackles, 22 carries, 90 yards, a touchdown. He goes 3 for 34 in his 3 starts this season. 26 carries, 112 yards. He went 6 for 59 in week 3 through the air. So big game usage there, 32 touches again in week 5. That's 25 for 113, 7 receptions, 40 yards. And this week he has 25 touches. He goes 22 for 90 and a touchdown, 3 for 3. So 3 targets, 3 receptions for 34 yards this week. So really big performances here again. He should be a running back one any week that he plays. I played him over Barkley this week. Like, it wasn't a hard decision. Like, his top 5 play this week, and he pays off pretty good. So you like to see that. We'll see. I mean, this offense is like, I know I'm sort of, I could be traumatic to some folks in the group me chat and some subscribers talking about the Minnesota offense, but I think by and large, like, they are focused on running the ball and they can move the ball, and it's not entirely smooth, I guess would be the word, or entirely as wanted, but Madison's performing well. Best game Madison's had this year in terms of PFF grade as well. And the 6 forced missed tackles was good. He actually lagged behind in some of the PFF stuff earlier on in the season, so it's good to see that he actually performed. This was by far his best, PFF grade and missed tackles force and all that stuff this week. Okay. The Saints here, Ty Montgomery, 34 of the 49 snaps were out of the backfield. He had 25 routes on the week, only 10 for Ingram. So in a week where no Kamara, it's really Montgomery playing the running back receiving role in that offense, and Kamara, 10 for 28 on the ground. He's the only running back to really carry it. So it's pretty low-end production at this point, especially if Taysom Hill's not going to be productive. I don't think I think Ingram's more in your flex consideration than he is a running back two or anything like that. with Kamara out, but it looks like Kamara probably should return this week. So just keep that in mind, I guess, and you can probably move it along from Tony Jones off the back end of your rosters as well. Detroit, so 17 for 72 and a fumble for Jamal Williams. He runs 9 routes, 1 target, 1 reception, 9 yards there. So that's in the running back 3 range. It's not a complete fall on your face, but you would like to have had more. Some interesting stuff here. Godwin Igwabuki, he goes 2 for 8 on the ground. Okay, 25 routes, though. That's very interesting. Only 2 targets, 1 reception, 13 yards. But that's one that's definitely opening my eyes. Again, if we're expecting some Swift time being out, I think we could basically see a handcuff situation behind Jamal Williams being Igwabuki and Jamar Jefferson. Jamar Jefferson, 5 for 18 on the ground, but only 2 routes. So you see this thing really as it's segmenting itself into where it is. And Jamal Williams running back 27 on the week, pending Monday Night Football. And Igwabuki, I think, warrants a pickup for sure. And I'll say this too, like, that's an interesting... Again, it's not super productive in terms of the receiving stuff, but he's a positional convert. They've thought pretty highly of him to keep him around when otherwise, like, they could have made decisions that would have basically, like, kind of let him walk. They could have exposed him on waivers and stuff like that. They did a good job of keeping him under their control, and now it's starting to pay off. That was all done in the preseason. Now it's starting to pay off here for Godwin Igwabuki. So really interesting there. We'll see, you know, as a potential deeper hold, you know, into the offseason. That's probably more of like, you know, outside of Jamal Williams being caught or something like that, not being there. I think Igwabuki's probably not making it past rookie drafts would be my thought. But I do think right now he's curious enough to hold as an injury away guy to Jamal Williams, and then just look and see what the offseason brings. Okay, Nick Chubb and Cleveland were off this week, so it's Chubb, it's Hunt, and I don't think much else there. I have cut Dearness Johnson in a handful of spots. I'd like to get him back if I could, but he's a running back 3. I think he could be a running back 2 next year, so I would, you know, make sure to, you want to carry him into the offseason. I just haven't, there's just been other opportunities. I can't really worry about the running back 2. You know, the running back 2 spot in Cleveland's a next year problem for me, and not, you know, week 12 problem this year, right? There's bigger fish to fry on my contending teams that I just couldn't hang on to him. So yeah, that's kind of where I am at on that. Again, I could definitely see that you could pitch me on the case for keeping him. He's played fine, but I just am a little, I'm tight on rosters and had to move on from him in a handful of spots. Next up here is the LA Rams, and a disappointing situation with Daryl Henderson being active but not playing. Sony Michel goes big. I know it hurt some people in the group me chat. I didn't see the news of it, and I actually had Henderson in. I was just predisposed to doing some family things and didn't see any news of it, and that Henderson was basically an active DNP, essentially, if you will. And that's how it turned out. I know there was chat going on in the Football Guys staff chat about making swaps and stuff on DFS. And, you know, I was just like, I don't know, you know, that bet's a little bit different in terms of what they were trying to do, but disappointing situation. Although I guess we get to see Sony Michel looks pretty good, and, you know, we'll see. This could be a good spot for him in the good landing spot in the off season, right? This could be a good situation for him to show what he can do in a, you know, handling a bell cow role, and maybe have a spot in free agency where he can be pretty interesting. So that's, you know, and maybe it's even an injury away guy someplace else. But you could, there's some other places you could see where, like, they could use a guy that can actually, you know, run. Like, it'd be quasi interesting in Buffalo, for example. So good for him to put on the resume, and we'll see where he is. Again, I think when Daryl Henderson comes back, it's probably Daryl Henderson's job, but maybe instead of it being like 85-15 or 90-10, maybe it's more 80-20 or 75-25. Maybe that caps a little of the ceiling off of Henderson. So we'll watch for that and see where that goes. And if we get any more indications in week, I do think if Henderson plays next week, you probably feel better about him, right? I think if this is one of those situations where he goes and is, it gets a full week of practice in and that sort of thing, and it is healthy, I think you probably feel better about it than you do this week. So that would just sort of be my hunch on it. Okay, Green Bay returning from bye, so we'll see there. Aaron Jones hopefully should be on the mend. A.J. Dillon, running back one any week. Aaron Jones isn't there. He's more of a flex-type consideration that you don't feel horrible about if Aaron Jones is playing. Clyde Edwards-Helaire and Darrell Williams split some work here this past week. You get 15 carries, 54 yards, 3 receptions, 28 yards for Clyde Edwards-Helaire, 5 carries, 20 yards for Darrell Williams. He goes 3 for 60 through the air. So both running back 2 fringe types, probably will settle in. You know, we'll see what happens on Monday night. But that's right around the 2-3 range of the position there. So I think you feel more comfortable playing Edwards-Helaire given the volume stuff. And, you know, Darrell Williams was basically buoyed by some long receiving yards. So I think you feel best about Edwards-Helaire if he's going to pound in the rock. You know, you're going to get, instead of it being running back 2 type production, it's going to be running back 1 type production. So that's, I think you feel confident starting Clyde Edwards-Helaire sort of on that basis. Is he great? No. Is he kind of locked into the leading role in what I think is a decent offense? Yeah. Is it worth as much as people wanted to pitch that on? No. But I think at this point, you're kind of with him on in that running back 2 type of range. Like, there's not a lot of differences there. And there's a lot of different ways you can look at the position. There's not a ton that I think are super, it's super clear in that range. And he sort of fits in that range there for you. So I think a lot of it is what you value. All right. Tampa Bay, Leonard Fournette, 96.9 points since week 10. That's running back 3 during the time span. 13 for 44 this week on the ground. So not a ton there, but 7 for 48 and a touchdown. He had a good one-handed grab for a touchdown, 39 routes. Only one route for Gio and, excuse me, one route for Rojo and 2 for Gio. So this is basically a locked and loaded Leonard Fournette backfield. Like, it's as good as it gets in terms of the only thing you're not getting is like point blank touchdown rushes per game. But besides that, it's everything you can want, and it's really, really lucrative. So I'm excited to see what Fournette can offer here at the end of the season. I think Rojo is probably still your injury way guy, but I don't think this workload is there for anybody else. If Rojo is hurt or if Fournette is hurt, I don't think Rojo takes a full bell cow role, nor do I think Gio does. I think it becomes a split and this hugely lucrative situation goes away. So just for what that's worth. Okay, Atlanta. Mike Davis actually outplayed Cordarrelle Patterson this week in terms of snaps, but it's Cordarrelle Patterson, 13 rushes, 78 yards, no touchdowns. He goes 3 for 18 on the ground. Excuse me, 3 for 18 through the air. It's Mike Davis, 4 for 32 and a touchdown. He goes 4 for 37 through the air. So on 8 touches, he basically puts up 69 yards. It's very nice. When you look at the past 2 weeks, which is when Cordarrelle Patterson has come back from his injury, 28 for 178 and 2 touchdowns, 32 routes. Mike Davis during that time span, 9 for 48. So basically we're looking at a 3-to-1 rushing advantage for Patterson over Mike Davis. Mike Davis added a touchdown during that time, 40 routes. So he's actually out route run Cordarrelle Patterson during that time span. Patterson's ripping off like 6 yards per carry. So that's good, but it's interesting that some of the passing game work has gone away. So I don't know if that's a function of his injury. I've seen some speculation about that. Be really curious to see that. I think you feel fine about his floor, and that's really the beauty of starting a running back in the wide receiver spot is, and that's just the beauty of starting a running back in the flex spot, honestly. Like, when you get to choose between the two, take the guy that's got the rushing because you kind of know what you're going to get stuff. And that's a lot of it with him. Again, if that passing game starts to flip back towards him a little bit more, there's a lot more ceiling there. But you know, if he's settled in as a running back 2 type producer, I think you feel fine with that in any given week, you know, given where you got him from. And I think the value of what he's putting in your roster right now, he's an every week start. So Vegas, so this is some interesting stuff going on with Vegas. It looks like Kenyon Drake's probably going to be out for an extended period of time, if not the year, with an injury. Jalen Richard was placed on the COVID-19 list. It is not clear that that occurred on Sunday morning. So it is not clear as of my recording on Monday at about noon what his testing status is. It does appear that he has been pretty anti-vax. Again, I'm not getting into the wisdom or the, you know, politics of this at all. Just to say that it does appear that he was not vaccinated. As a result of that, there is a difference in how you're treated, right? So if you are a close contact of somebody, you can not have COVID, but you can be put in the protocol because you're a close contact. You got to go through all the testing and all that stuff. If you are vaccinated, fully vaccinated, you do not have to do that. So, you know, for example, my wife gets COVID. If I'm not vaccinated, she would be a close contact of me, and I think the quarantine's 5 days. If I'm negative throughout that point, like, I can come back and participate. If I am vaccinated, I don't have to even be out, even though she's a close contact to me. So that's how they're treating it. And so there's two explanations for why Richard was placed on the list. Either he's tested positive for COVID, or he's a close contact. If he's a close contact and he stays negative throughout the week, he could potentially play next week, which would be week 14. If he is positive, right? So if he actually tested positive for COVID-19, he is, and that test took place on either Saturday or Sunday, which I'm assuming that it did based on what it was reported out, he would have to miss next week. So you combine that with the Drake injury, and all of a sudden you're putting Josh Jacobs into a role where he was taking a massive step forward in terms of the passing game work. 33 routes, 42 dropbacks. He has 9 targets, right? So just a really high-end production where we wouldn't otherwise have expected it. And this is the good thing about his profile, which is that, you know, if things broke right, he had this upside. 47.2 rushing yards per game is just not good, right? That's just not what you want at all from him. You weren't hoping for that. That is a disappointment by all means. But I will say this. Things have not gone well for him. Still, he is, when you look at him from a season-long basis on 10 games, averaging 151.8 points, and he's averaging 15.2 points per game. You will take that. When you look at his, right, so 472 yards, like, he's going to be below 800 yards on the season is probably where he's going to be at. You look at that and you're like, well, that's a disaster. And it is. Like, that's not good. It hasn't been a good rushing season for him at all. That said, 9th in terms of receptions from the running back position. Guys in front of him that you would expect him to catch, I think it's a fair shot that he catches Zeke, which is right in front of him at 40. J.D. McKissick's hurt. Cordarrelle Patterson hasn't been running the same amount of routes recently. So you could potentially see him catch those guys. Again, he's 5 behind Patterson. He's 6 behind Myles Gaskin, who is at running back 5. Again, that's hard to catch in the closing stretch of the season where it's 5 games. But Gaskin's played a game more than him. Right, so even when you look at that, you say, okay, you know, Gaskin's actually played 13 games. Jacob has only played 10, but he hasn't had his bye yet. So when you sort of look at that, just on a season long standings pace, you're almost to a spot where he could be a top 5 in receptions guy, and he's only played 10 games. And you look at it, and it's like, hey, if I had told you could get 3.9 receptions per game out of Josh Jacobs, where would he finish? We probably would have said damn high. And again, you get into the injury stuff, like all of that. But this is a good part of his profile is that there was a lot of outs. Maybe we didn't necessarily see that there were a ton of receiving outs, but when things go this way, it's like Fournette. Things go this way, they can break this way favorably for you. So good on Jacobs for taking this chance. And listen, this could be an uptick situation for him. So, and you could definitely see him finish top five at the position in receiving yards pretty comfortably. Okay. Next up is, and so by the way, Peyton Barber probably should be a running back to own here. Again, here's the situation. I don't know what the Jalen Rashard length this is going to be, and we haven't gotten confirmation on Drake's injury length or anything like that, but it looks like it's going to be a longer-term thing. Again, I'm recording this Monday morning. If like, this is a situation where they're both out, like, all of a sudden Barber can fit into a role where, hey, like, he could do both. Like, again, it's not, is it high-end? No, but in a situation, like, in a bind, could you see playing him in a playoff game? You could. And so for him, even though he's been inactive and all that stuff, in the week that you would start him, which is the week that Jacobs is hurt, he would be the bell cow. So I think that's a really interesting watch at this particular point. Okay. Next up is Jonathan Taylor. Marlon Mack has been inactive. They've been playing Deion, I believe it's Deion Jackson, as their special teams guy who's been getting a little work. For the relevant purposes of here, it is Jonathan Taylor's running back one, but it is Marlon Mack would be the guy in the event of a Jonathan Taylor injury to take over. So I think that that's an important thing to think about and understand at this point. All right, next up, Devonta Freeman, clear lead back in Baltimore, running back 14 since week 7, 14.3 points per game, 14 carries, 52 yards, a touchdown, 5 for 33 on the passing side of things. Latavius Murray, 4 total touches. So clear situation there. Freeman should be on your running back 2 radar. San Francisco, Jeff Wilson has an unknown injury, so this could be interesting. Jeff Wilson has an unknown injury, Sermon IR, Jamichael Hasty, arrow pointing up. I think he's an aggressive bid. Let's see what happens on the Jeff Wilson injury spectrum here earlier this week. Elijah Mitchell, clear lock and load running back in your lineup. But Jamichael Hasty is the one that could potentially be a difference maker here down the stretch from a human hand grenade perspective. So interesting watch there. All right, Pittsburgh, Najee Harris, locked and loaded. Not a ton that we know after the situation. Like, I would cut anyone there for Jamichael Hasty, for example. I'd cut anyone there for Peyton Barber, for example. So I think that those things are I just don't have any clarity. And at this point, you know, you're counting weeks. He gets injured in week 14. Then week 15, you feel comfortable starting anyone. And then week 16, are you going to have gained enough from week 14 and or of week 14's usage and week 15's usage to potentially play someone in the semifinals week of your playoffs? Like, that's assuming he gets injured next week, right? And then if he doesn't, bump it back another week, and then that decision's in the championship game. You have any confidence in doing that? I don't. Cut the situation loose. Chase Edmonds, we're still watching his return here. It should be another week off. James Conner, running back 20 in the last two games, 41 for 137 and a touchdown. He goes 7 for 73 and a touchdown on the passing side of things as well. So not a great performance overall, but you'll take it in terms of like the scoring, like for sure. Get to 3.5 catches, you know, over 35 yards per game through the air. 36.5 through the air. Yeah, you'll totally take that. And then, you know, we'll see what the situation is with Edmonds as he works back, but you should get another week here. And then it's going to be week 15. That's going to be the unclear thing. I think once Edmonds comes back, I still do think Connor's flex viable. So he's one of the better, I think, flex play. He's in the Tony Pollard category of guys that you would flex, I think, as compared to like Madison, where you wouldn't if they were out, you know, if their starter was back and they were out of the starting role. All right, Carolina. This is a classic case of the offensive coordinator getting fired for something that's entirely not his fault. They hand him a pile of dog feces and say, here, make a beauty queen out of this. And like, you can put lipstick on that pile of shit as much as you want, but that thing ain't becoming a beauty queen. And Sam Darnold and Cam Newton, PJ Walker, there's not answers. And this should be a lesson for us. Like, fix the damn problem. Like, fix the problem. don't keep papering over it. Take your medicine. If you have a problem like this, take your medicine, fix the problem, right? Trade assets for a starting quarterback, but, you know, go in the tank, right? I'm not advocating tanking, but you sort of get the idea. Like, losing's okay in a short sample size if it, you know, if it increases your odds of hitting on a quarterback, right? All of those things, right? That's, you know, keep dumping money. I was joking today that, you know, they're going to be the team that's in on Roethlisberger next year, right? Isn't the Carolina Panthers a team that signs Roethlisberger and, like, you know, a day in a free agency for like 2 for $50 with, like, you know, a quarter, you know, with it split over 2 years, you know, 25 and 25 a year. And, you know, the second year of that $15 million guaranteed, like, isn't that absolutely what they'll do? Like, that's exact that, I don't know. I have zero faith that they're going to play this quarterback situation out, right? Even though they should, like, be able to play the long game, they're not at this particular point. So that's given me some pause there. On that entire situation. That said, Chuba Hubbard, Amir Abdullah, I think it's Hubbard's a running back two consideration for you. I think it's a good, decent flex play depending on your matchups. Javonte Williams, Rose, and running back one. So that happened. Melvin Gordon, we'll see when he comes back. I still don't think it's going to be that much of a difference, right? I still think they're both probably running back two flex types. You know, and if you're playing Javonte Williams in a running back one type role, I think you're probably going to be let down, sort of be my hunch. But other than that, like, I mean, this is a good sign for him heading into the offseason. Next up, Saquon Barkley and the New York Giants. And I'll just – so maybe we could talk more about this in the offseason, but I am thoroughly you know, if I can get anything close to, like, a top eight value for Barkley, I'm out. And here's why, right? I struggle with this, and this is a place that I have to be very – self-evaluative, I guess is the phrase to put it with. We have on our hands a money ball type situation. We have on our hands a, if it's a Scott Hatterberg situation, if it's a, you know, I don't know, a Jeremy Giambi situation. I'm not exactly sure who the comp is because it's the opposite way around in terms of the comp that we're going to make. But this one is a classic situation of, maybe it's he's the Billy Bean, the player version of Billy Bean, which is all the tools, all the promise, all the hype. And you want to know what? There's just something that when you actually look at the numbers, it ain't there. And with Barkley, his PFF grade down markedly year over year. This year, basically about the same as last, but it's down basically 7 points from year one to year two, and then another 12 points from now since then. So that's not good. When you look at the passing stuff, it's terrible. Right? He's got a PFF grade of 49.3 in terms of passing. His yards per route run, 1.03. Like, that's dismal. You know, his career high, 1.53. Like, he's taking a huge, huge, huge step back. And I know what the counter is. Jordan, the offense is terrible. Then outproduced Devontae Booker. 1.12 yards per route run for Devontae Booker, 1.03 for Saquon Barkley. If you want to sell me that this offense is terrible and that's the reason why Saquon Barkley is not any good, fine. That said, outproduce the guy that's your backup. Outproduce him, right? Yak per reception. It's higher. It's substantially higher for Booker than Barkley. Substantially higher. And he's it's a not that different of an ADOT either. It's relatively close. I mean, this is just a yards per reception way below Booker, right? I mean, passing grade below Booker, right? All of these things below Booker. And it gives me – and it's the same amount of routes, right? It's 179 for Booker. It's 188 for Barkley, right? This isn't a – we're not, you know, playing sample size nonsense here or anything like that. Like, it's basically the same usage. And he's not performing well. He's just not. And so, I mean, at some point, you know, you have to produce at some point. And, I mean, if his name was Joe Smith and he was, you know, you know, on any other team or had any other, you know, he didn't have the Saquon Barkley legacy coming in, greatest human on earth thing, he would be a running back three in dynasty cost. He would be like the lesser version of Josh Jacobs. Like, that's what he would be. You know, when is the promise going to happen? We've gone on. He hasn't broken 60 yards yet this year rushing. When's that going to happen? 2019. Last time we've had, like, I think it's 61 yards. I mean, this is what we're – this is an elite asset? It's not at this point. So two touchdowns this year. He hasn't had a touch – you know, he's had – this is you know, he had six touchdowns in 2019. He's at two, and he played minimally last year, but then – to this year. I mean, it's a stark drop in everything, right? When you look at it in terms of missed tackles forced, right, it's way down. It's down in, you know, actually his 2019 numbers were better than his 2018 numbers in that sense, and it's way down from there. I mean, this is a situation of, it's the definition of faith, right? Belief without evidence. This is the definition of faith at this point. And it's becoming pretty clear to me that I just don't think, you know, and listen, he's going to be 20, he'll be 25. And the scary part is he'll be 25. You know what I mean? That's, I sort of say that, right? And now you've got a 25-year-old running back who really hasn't been good in 2+ years. And you're going to value that where? It's a single digit, that's a position? Like, that's closer to 40 than it is 10 in a normal year, in a normal name. I don't know. I'll be really curious to see where he settles out. I'm going to try and get as much as I can full price. And it's going to be an aggressive thing that I do earlier in the offseason, because I think maybe we can catch people. You know, maybe we get a couple uptick games and we can catch people in a this sort of middle type situation. But this was the problem that I had with him coming in. And I said, like, I don't have a good argument for anyone over him, but this profile is not great. And, you know, I still don't have a lot of great arguments for people over him, but the profile is even less good now, you know, and that's the thing that's really interesting with him. I mean, I'm arbing the hell out of him in the offseason. That's what I'm going to do. So we'll see how that works. All right. Chicago, David Montgomery, Khalil Herbert, pretty clear situation there. Montgomery is basically a running back nine the last 3 weeks. Again, there's a couple guys that could play, but I don't think any of them are going to really jump that. But basically, running back one. Pretty good. 22.6 points per game for Mixon over the past three. He was banged up a little bit in this game, so just watch that. I don't think it's anything major, but I saw reports that he was in the tent, so just be careful there. But otherwise, he's locked and loaded. P. Ryan's your backup. Miles Sanders, a big performance here in the backfield with Jordan Howard out, Boston Scott minimally played. Kenneth Gainwell was the backup. I mean, they're coming up here on a week off, and this is going to be one that I think we need to watch and see where they, you know, what comes out of this bye situation for them. So that will be something we're definitely going to have to watch, because I'm not sure. I think it's Sanders and then Howard would sort of be my hunch, and then Scott and Gainwell. Like, that sort of regresses to what they were, I think, healthy, but I'm not entirely sure where that's going to fit in ultimately. Seattle's a disaster. I want no part of it. So AP, Penny, Alex Collins, Travis Homer, DJ Dell. Like, it's mind numbing at this point. I you know, have Alex Collins, he's unplayable, and then they make him as a an inactive this week. I mean, it's an unusable situation in my mind, especially with AP there. James Robinson needs to go to the Urban Meyer school of working on your hands and your hand placement. Because he keeps fumbling. So he's got two out of the past two games he's fumbled in. So that's not great. Carlos Hyde is basically in a complete timeshare. And the beneficiary of that Travis Etienne heading into the offseason. I don't think that Hyde is exactly what I would consider a like a kind of in that range of your flex guys that we sort of talked about earlier, like your James Conner and your you know, your Pollard, those type of guys that are like injury away, but they're also flex worthy. I don't think, outside of a desperation type, I'm feeling that on Hyde. I will say though, he is upticking in usage. You know, if they were to shut, I've seen speculation they would shut James Robinson down. I don't believe that, but if they for some reason were to do that, Hyde's a beneficiary. And listen, he's showing up on waiver wires. Like, add him. That's a scrap to pick up and figure it out later on. But definitely with Hyde, I think you you know, you monitor the waiver wire because he has popped up a couple of times. Tevin Coleman, the lead running back for the Jets, ahead of Ty Johnson. Ty Johnson basically doing all of the passing game work there for the Jets, or I shouldn't say all of it, most of it. And Tevin Coleman, 11 out of 13 carries. I don't feel particularly great about the entire situation. Rex Burkhead, he's a starter. Royce Freeman comes in, basically chops up the work with him, but he's really playing behind David Johnson, who was sick. I don't feel great about it. I think Freeman's interesting from a, you know, look and see. But listen, I think we're on team three at this point. That's not a great situation either. Even though I really love the profile coming out, that'll be one of the lessons we learned from a miss perspective. Again, I thought, you know, 60-40 odds misses a healthy portion of the time. And that's just kind of what has happened with Royce Freeman. All right, Miami, Miles Gaskin. It's back to Salvin Ahmed being the injury away guy. I don't have a clear one. It's very unclear to me what the backup situation is. And I'm fine cutting basically all of it because, again, same situation. You have a week coming up where, you know, if he's were to get injured, it's going to take a week for it to settle. And then all of a sudden, we're in the midst of the playoffs and we're like, all right, how do we feel about Philip Lindsay? Right? And they have a week 14 bye, so it's even worse, right? So they have we're coming up on week 14 bye. So it's Philip. So it'll be week 15. Gaskin would have to get injured, and then week 16 we'd have to get some sort of settling out of that, and then week 17 in a championship game you'd have to feel confident playing them. No thanks. I don't think that either. By the way, the teams with week 14 byes, Philadelphia similarly situated. Again, I think Jordan Howard probably, but I think you could probably cut Boston Scott, cut Gennis Gainwell in shorter rosters where you think that you're rostering an injury away guy. You know, maybe you're trying to take a longer-term play with Gainwell. I don't know what the rest of your roster looks like, but I definitely think, you know, with the Boston Scott in particular, you're not going to be ever confident playing him until your semifinals of your playoffs, assuming you get there. Cut him for someone that can help you in advance. All right, so Buffalo plays this week. It's Matt Breida. It's Devin Singletary. You know, I'll be interested to see, like, what this – they're on a long sort of layover here. It's like a extended – it's a mini buy, but like an extended version of like a, you know, it's because it's that Thursday to Sunday, but it's actually an additional day. So you do have the option that this offense could potentially change. I will say this, for a team that people are worried about, you know, what are they going to do in the playoffs? Like, hey, put the ball in 17's hands and let them run. Right? You're not going to do that in week six on the road at Miami, right? You're going to eat the 13 for 38 and not a lot of production out of the running back position. You're just going to deal with that, right? You want to know when you run, you know, when you sort of the high leverage situation. I mean, it's like the closer in baseball, right? Like for years, it was like, hey, don't just wait till the last three outs to use your closer. Like if it comes up in the middle of the seventh inning where like the main part of their lineup is up and like you need your best player to go out there and pitch, like put him in then because that's where your value is. Right. Absolutely the same case for quarterback runs, right? Like when do you need to go to the well? Like you need to go to the well when it's really high leverage. You know what's really high leverage? Monday Night Football when the number one seed in the AFC champion in the AFC and the right to play home field throughout the AFC championship is very much going to be dictated by the outcome of this game. That's when you run 17, right? That's when you run him double digit times. Like that's when you scheme up the design runs. They have done that in the past. It's not something you do every week. All that's to say, like, I'm really interested to see if they've incorporated more Breida stuff in this off week. And I think that the ceiling on Josh Allen can be high, because I think that, you know, it doesn't help you for week 13 because he's already in your lineup, or he's not, and he's most assuredly is. But I do think you have upside shots with Josh Allen here. Spike potential weeks coming down the stretch as they sort of, you need to play more games. Sort of, they're really darn important now, like, especially these games against the Patriots. You can see them, you know, lean on him. All right, the Chargers, Austin Eckler, your lead back. He's a monster. Justin Jackson's your backup. Sort of Josh Kelly, late Roundtree. I don't. Again, this feels very right. Same calculus. Seems very, very similar. I don't feel as, you know, I think that there's potential there that you could have some clarity in a semifinals week, right? So if Austin Eckler were to get hurt in week 14, you know, week 15, you sort of get maybe some answers to the usage, and then week 16, you start somebody. Where you don't have that for the teams that have a bye. Again, I think if there's other clear situations, you know, I'm cutting these guys for Carlos Hyde, and I'm absolutely doing that. You know, so those would be situations I think that you need to, you know, that you need to exploit. I'm cutting him for a backup quarterback, you know, where I don't have one, that sort of thing, you know, to hedge my own quarterback, that sort of stuff. Cutting him for defense, right? I think that sort of stuff. Not necessarily, I would probably keep Jackson at this point, but the other two, you know, if there's things that can help you down the stretch, you've reached the point of, are these guys long-term assets? No. Can they help you in a way that you feel confident? No. Then they don't help your roster. Last but not least, Antonio Gibson. We saw some Wendell Smallwood. We saw some J.D. McKissic injury. I do think I'll update this once we get the full J.D. McKissic rundown on the injury. Jarrett Patterson's interesting as well. I think this could maybe unlock some ceiling for Antonio Gibson, although he's lacked any sort of receiving ceiling to date. I think this the lack of McKissic could. Smallwood came in, played in some of that role as well. So definitely watching that. We'll pay attention to that early this week. We'll get an update out, you know, for the primer and that sort of stuff for your end of the week stuff. All right, that'll do it for this episode. Again, a little bit longer, but I there's some of these things that I think are more important as we sort of get into the high leverage situations. And I'm going to just give you, you know, this isn't the time of year to spend a lot of time planning on long term. It's a lot of time of the year planning on right now. Pay attention to what's going on right now. And you can worry about, you know, July is 6 months from Jordan's problem, right? You know, and that goes for us all, right? If we have a chance to win, do it, right? Do it. Maximize your odds of winning. Don't worry about what my running back 7 spot might be in August of next year, because you know what? You're probably not going to get it right anyways. And if there's a shot to increase your odds at winning this year, and that, you know, if it's the Kenneth Gainwell situation or whatever, some of these situations we talked about, that, hey, maybe that's good. Like Darren Johnson is a good example. Like, hey, he could be in August. Be like, yes. But something more consequential could be right now. And you know, that's kind of, I think, where I think you need to lean at this point. So that'll do it for this episode. Again, until next time, continue embracing the variance. We'll talk again very soon.